Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. I'm your host, Greg. We have an all-star panel here with us today. We have my sidekick, Ben Daniels, our wily veteran, Brian Ashlock, and a special guest back from the past. It's Michael Cayley, our evil numbers wizard. Let's get things started. We have a North London derby to talk about. Spurs drew 2-2 at the, I was about to say Etihad, but it's the Emirates. Hard to keep them straight, I suppose. But I think this was a game that wasn't the disaster we were all expecting, but didn't quite leave anybody satisfied. Michael, you are a gracious guest today. So what do you think? Is this something that should give Spurs fans concern, or should we be feeling a little better after this game, or maybe both?
Yeah, this was pretty bad. I mean, like, you know, the Spurs went out there to do the thing they did from, like, the point that Dyer got injured last year at the end of the season. The thing that Joel called the air raid, we all started calling the air raid. And they sat in a mid-block. They let Arsenal come on to them, but they would also, like, press high at times to try to spring some turnovers and trust that even though they didn't have a midfield, their defenders would make the plays to stop them. Or they would spring quickly from the back, trying to hit long balls, especially to Son or for Kane to flick on. And they got some good chances out of that in the first half. And then in the second half, they just got, like, completely overrun. Especially from about, like, 60 to 80 minutes was, like, as bad as the City game. But, like, against Arsenal, which is not great.
But this is the problem with...
The expected goals ended up being, expected goals end up being 2.3 to 1.4, but if you include the penalty, that evens out a little bit. But, like, Spurs gave up a ton of shots, a ton of chances. They let Arsenal just sort of, like, run them over in midfield, and they weren't stopping them well. It was mostly quite tough to watch.
But this is a problem with the air raid, right? It's that it's sort of good for these it can be good for, like, attacking another team or springing counters, depending on how you play it, but it's not... It's got problems if you want to maintain control of a match.
Yeah, I mean, but this was worse than the air raid was last year most of the time. Like, 26 shots allowed is more than we allowed at any game at all last season.
So is there a difference? I mean, obviously there's a difference. What is the difference, I suppose, is the better question.
We're worse now.
The difference is that we're playing a system that depends on our defenders to make a lot of plays, and we're playing Davinson Sanchez at right back.
In a weird way, I find that comforting, and just in that maybe I'm being delusional here. I don't think we're going to see that too much this year. At least I hope we don't see that too much this year.
Right. The hope, and this is what we were talking about a little bit before the podcast, the hopeful story here is that Spurs mostly shouldn't play the air raid, and when they do, they shouldn't need to be playing a Wink Sissoko midfield, and so they should just be better once they start playing better players. And, like, the hopeful story, which is the hopeful story all through the first four matches of this season, is no, really, this isn't Spurs. This is Spurs without the key players. This is, you know, Ndombele, we saw him for two games, and he was there for the one really good half that we played. Lo Celso hasn't come in yet. Sessegnon is still injured. We are still waiting on what was going to happen with Eriksen. Like, the full team isn't there yet. Once Poche was feuding with Vertonghen or something, and we still haven't seen the full team yet. And I think that's reasonable. I think that's true. It's just, like, we're still waiting.
I mean, it feels like an excuse, right, Ben?
I mean, it's... It does, but I mean, it's
feels like a true excuse. Like, it's more of a, it's a reason, not an excuse. Like, we should still be much better than we have been, even with out key players. You know, other teams with worse players than what we put out will beat Newcastle at home and will not concede as many good chances to Man City and Arsenal and play better games against them. So, you know, it doesn't excuse our performances, but it is a reason to hope that we will get better. You know, even seeing, you know, Vertonghen finally come back into the team, you know, he looked better at center back than Davinson Sanchez has all season. Seeing Eriksen go a full 90, you know, he looked good. You know, we're already seeing some of those little improvements. And, you know, right back, we saw Kyle Walker-Peters look, you know, pretty decent before getting injured and throwing our right back situation into chaos. So, you know, we do have a sense already that some of these fixes are viable. You know, Ndombele has been very good when we've seen him. Lo Celso had a cameo appearance at the end of this game, and when he came on, those last 10-15 minutes, we finally started looking good again and creating opportunities and pressing forward, and, you know, we had a arguable penalty shout and a really good opportunity at the end that the counterattack happened to fall to Musa Sissoko in the box, which made it, I guess, by definition, not a good counterattack, but, you know, things were working in places where these missing players have suddenly been. So I am hopeful, but yeah, it was not fun to watch. What I'm really confused about is what happened between the first half and the second half. You know, the first half we were playing a system that invited a lot of pressure, but we were mostly cutting out those chances and making the plays we needed to, and we were getting good looks on the break. You know, we were up 2-0. That should be a situation where, even if the scenario we set up in wasn't perfect, it worked. For 45 minutes, it worked, and we took a 2-goal lead. Like, we should be able to close that game out. And not only did we not close the game out, we lost all of our attacking impetus. We were no longer able to counter and, you know, give Arsenal something to worry about. And we just looked a mess at the back, and we just let so many chances happen. And I don't really have an explanation for why it went so badly.
What bothers me more than that is that we didn't bring on Lo Celso sooner. Like, regardless of what happened, clearly they needed some control in midfield, and that they waited as long as they did to bring him in. Maybe he's not, like, 90 minutes match fit now, but he should be able to handle 30 minutes, you know, 35 minutes.
Yeah, it seems like they brought in... Go ahead.
You got it.
They brought in Dele, I think, with the same... That was the concept. They bring in Dele, he's going to start pressing, he's going to cover more ground, he's going to help, and he just didn't. They brought him on for Lamela, who was on a yellow and looked... like he was actually going to get that second yellow. Everyone assumes he's gotten so many times. He never has. But
Dele for it. He looks hungry for that second yellow.
Martin Atkinson really didn't want to give a second yellow. And Dele, Lamella's going to force it. Like, it looked like they brought in a guy who was, like, getting a game for match fitness and couldn't do the things we needed to do to fix it. The other thing that happened is that Arsenal finally brought in Ceballos, who inexplicably didn't start. And suddenly they had, like, a more advanced passer to sort of tick the attack over.
Yeah, there were a lot of questionable roster decisions in this game.
Yeah, I mean, Ceballos cut us open. He really killed us and made it very annoying that we didn't sign him and Arsenal did. And yeah, that game probably would have been worse had he started from the beginning. But, you know, Pochettino's not the only guy who can mismanage his squad, so that's cool.
And speaking of mismanaging squads, Real Madrid is really strong defensively this season, and they could really use Dani Ceballos or even Mateo Kovacic, really good midfielders that they've gotten rid of, and it seems pretty likely that Zidane's not going to survive the season. and thus Real Madrid are just going to recall Ceballos and Arsenal won't get to have them after this year. So that's good.
Hopefully.
Brian, what's your concern level coming out of this match?
Well, I think, like Michael said earlier, I think just because the narrative stretched across these four games is we played like a good half of football, my concern level is kind of high, even when you take into consideration that we haven't had our best team or our best players as integrated as we'd like. I think I said it on the show last week. My main concern has just been the weird management decisions that Pochettino's been making. I mean, you know, we're talking about this is probably the fourth game of the season that he's gotten his tactics kind of wrong with. And maybe not so much the tactics in this one, just as the selection, I guess. And I don't know. I mean, like I said, last week, it's so often last season down the stretch, Pochettino was putting us in positions to win games with the players that we had available and doing exactly the right stuff. And then this season, he's apparently trying to do that, but it has yet to work.
Clearly something's going on with this whole transfer window thing, and I can't tell if it's real or if it's just Pochettino acting out.
Well, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where it's just like, you know, you have a cult leader for a manager. This is the kind of stuff that you get when people aren't drinking the Kool-Aid. And they're like, I think I want to leave the cult, actually. The cult isn't actually that much fun. I have to run a lot. I'd like to not. And you know, the whole Vertonghen and Eriksen thing, those two are particularly weird because Vertonghen seems to be one of those players who, whatever the contract situation is, has been most invested in the cult for the last few years, and he and Eriksen are not playing, while Alderweireld, who is very much like, I'm gone, is playing, and so it's just baffling. And then we finally get Vertonghen in this game, and you know, he's have to be part of a back line that has Davinson Sanchez as a right back, and I just never want to see that ever again.
What I don't get is if Poch is willing to sort of swallow his pride and put, like, Eriksen, who, of all the guys he was having issues with, Eriksen I kind of understand because there have been some substantive transfer links around him and he clearly wanted to go. But, you know, like, he was clearly willing to swallow his pride with Eriksen this year for the big matches, this game, the City game. You know, he's willing to sort it out with Vertonghen for this big match. I don't understand why Aurier, who, if the pictures are to believe, has at least been training with the first team squad, you know, why you won't. I mean, I don't like watching Serge Aurier play right back for Tottenham, but I probably prefer it to watching, you know, Davinson Sanchez do it. And this game probably goes better. I mean, who the hell knows? He's certainly capable of making two dumb errors, but it probably goes better if we've got Aurier in there.
I mean, yeah, if your concern is that Aurier will give away a dumb penalty or do 15 foul throw-ins or whatever, valid concerns. Those are things that he is very capable of doing. But at the same time, he is actually a fullback. And so then you maybe have a little more width on that side of the pitch. You have, you know, someone who's getting up and down the field, who is maybe putting Arsenal under pressure on the wings. And we didn't have that from Sanchez. Like his touch, his dribbling ability is not that good. I almost would have rather seen Toby play right back, which he has done before, than watch Sanchez do it. But then that would have put Sanchez back in the center of defense. But it was just a really baffling decision. Pochettino had a number of things he could have done. You could have played, you know, a different midfield and put Sissoko at right back. You could have done a back three. You could have done Alderweireld there. You could have played Aurier. Like I just
could
can't
have played
believe...
Rose and Davis as fullbacks. Like option.
I just can't believe that was the best option. Like that was what they worked on all week in training. Was like, all right, Davinson, this is your big opportunity. You're going to play fullback. I did it with Juan Foyth, and so here's your chance. Like I don't see how that was what sitting down in training they worked out. And it looked like literally something they'd come up with the day before. Like, he didn't look comfortable out there.
Well, I think Arsenal had a lot of joy down that flank, so.
And he had no idea where to go. When Spurs, like, off the ball, he mostly kind of waited and, like, gave them space and then tried to defend. But he was matched up against Aubameyang, which is a tough matchup one-on-one for anyone. But then, like, when Spurs had the ball, he had absolutely no idea where to be. He got up the field too far a couple of times. And a bunch of times, like, there'd be a Spurs move down the left, and they'd start cycling the ball over to the right, and there was literally no one there, because he had no idea that that was the time that he was supposed to get forward.
Yeah, and
it,
I mean,
was
I'm
so bad.
And I'm sympathetic to him, because, like, that, you know, he should have been better. He's a professional footballer. But, like, that's not a position he's, as far as I know, has ever played it at, in Europe. Maybe he played it when he was in South America. Maybe he played it some for the national team. I don't know. But he didn't play that position for Ajax. He certainly never played that position for Spurs before. And if that's what we're doing is against a local rival at their home stadium, we're putting a guy who's never even played a single Premier League minute at fullback. That's
yeah, I don't think
get.
It's his fault.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, like, he hasn't played well the rest of the season, so it's easy to pile on him. But, like, that performance is not entirely Davinson Sanchez's fault. Like, what is he supposed to – even if he spent all week trying to figure out when to go forward and when not to, that's still he's still not going to be in position to do the right things at the right time.
Yeah, this is like putting Kyle Walker in midfield. It's just – it's a bad idea, and I'm not sure. You can't blame the player.
Well, that was technical innovation, Greg.
Oh, sorry, I forgot. But yeah, it just doesn't make any sense, and it's putting the player in a position to fail. And you know, in some ways, I think we're lucky that he wasn't exposed more than we saw on Sunday.
Fun.
Good times. So. Obviously,
the goals that were fun.
Yeah, I was about to say. I think there are some positives to talk about in this match. In a lot of ways, you could see the attack starting to gel a little bit in terms of, you know, they were really taking it to Arsenal the first half. Son, I think, you know, on another day, maybe scores a few, but he was looking dangerous. You know, I don't know. I thought it was good. Ben, what were the highlights as far as you could see?
I mean. You know, Eriksen making that run to catch up with Lamela's rebound to open the scoring and remind everybody how important he is to the team for all the wrong reasons is always a delight. Eric Lamela trying to murder everybody was really, really fantastic to see.
He loves the North London Derby. He is. I don't think there's anybody who gets more excited for those games than Eric Lamela.
I know, and it's so unfair. Like, you know, all the fucking assholes who hate him for being a foreigner and a soft Argentine or whatever. Like, nobody, not even Harry Kane, loves his derby as much as Eric Lamela. And it's a real shame that people still don't appreciate him. I mean, I wish he was better, but what he does so well.
Well, then he does it and never gets the second yellow. That's what's incredible about it to me.
Yeah, well, part of that is because we have to take him off in 60 minutes.
But my point is, he still doesn't get the second yellow, which, considering how he plays, is should not go unremarked upon.
That's because Lamela knows that all refs in England are cowards, and they don't give second yellows unless they absolutely have to. So he is comfortable pushing that line as far as he absolutely can.
Even Johnny Farner can get away with it.
And if you're Granit Xhaka, you don't even get a first yellow for, like, 91 minutes.
Okay,
so.
Let's talk about this for a second, because during the game, as we were watching it in the writer's room, like, I certainly had this reaction. A lot of other people in the room had this reaction. I hesitate to say it because it sounds like I'm being a homer, and I probably am, but that was some fucking terrible refereeing in this game. I mean, Arsenal was, it felt like they were mugging us and completely getting away with it, and, like, anything we did to them was getting, like, whistled or carded, and it just, I know I'm exaggerating a little bit here, but I was not impressed with that refereeing performance.
Well, even allowing for the fact that it's a derby, and so a lot more stuff gets let go than in other typical matches, for Xhaka specifically, he definitely should have been carded on the penalty. And then the fact that he wasn't carded for any of the 10 fouls, that's an exaggeration, but like 5 or 6 subsequent fouls until that one at the very, like at the very end of the match, it was ridiculous.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was a point in the match when I think Arsenal had like 8 fouls called against them and Spurs had 5 yellow cards. And it was just like, it felt like the ref reffed it like a derby for Arsenal and reffed it completely differently for Spurs. And that, I mean, again, it's hard to say that without sounding like a homer, but it was like any time we had a counter or, you know, seemed to be in a moment of transition, they would like come through the back or something that's like, you know, a minor niggly foul, but it's a foul. And like the ref just seemed to let that go and it would just turn over possession so often back to Arsenal whenever we, you know, finally got some relief, you know, and got the ball out of our own half. And again, it felt like any time we made a slightly robust challenge anywhere on the pitch, the ref was blowing the whistle.
In fairness to him, I thought most of the yellow cards that we got were yellow cards. So, you know.
Yeah, but again, it's just like, you got to ref it both ways, you know. Either we're all getting a lot of yellows or we're not because it's a derby. You know?
Well, it was some tough shit to swallow, too. And, like I'm probably being a homer. I'm definitely being a homer when I say that Spurs should have gotten a penalty at the end of that game. But, like, Ben, I think before we recorded, you were saying to me, like, this is, like, I don't know, like, Aubameyang got a penalty at the fucking, like, last, in stoppage time, was it? It felt like stoppage time in the derby at, I can't remember if it was Wembley or the new White Hart Lane, but at Spurs last year for a much softer foul than that. And it's just, man, fuck these refs. They suck.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, Kane stopped and tried to shield the ball and was definitely looking for an opportunity to go down because he had kind of lost the angle there. But, you know, if the defender obliges you and shoves you 2 hands in the back, like, it's still a penalty. And it should have been called, in my opinion. But,
I mean, if we didn't get the one last week, we weren't going to get that one.
No, and certainly I don't know how much of this is reflected in the actual refereeing, but like Spurs are very much, Harry Kane in particular, is very much at like the center of this like, ooh, are they diving too much narrative, which I don't know. It seems like sports writers just love trotting that one out in England because I don't think Kane is any more or less likely to dive than any other major striker of his build and technique. And it's just, I don't know. I find the whole thing tiresome, but.
Especially when we have guys like Dele and Danny Rose who are way worse divers.
Oh, yeah.
And should definitely have more.
Well, you've also got, like, Lacazette, like, taking tumbles in the same fucking match, and it's just, ugh, it's so exhausting. It's so stupid.
Yeah, there are very few things more annoying than, like, fans getting their high horse about diving. Like, they all dive.
Yes.
It's how you get a penalty called. If you don't go down, you don't get a penalty called. Like if Son had tried to stay on his feet after Xhaka went in 2-foot and really tried to stay on his feet, maybe, like, he doesn't get a penalty. That'd be stupid because Xhaka fouled him. It was a penalty. Like,
well, there's VAR, which is definitely going to save him. So, you know.
Well, clearly not. Like, and they haven't had... There has not been a single... clear and obvious. There's maybe one clear and obvious review on VAR so far this year on who was it? The Chelsea goalkeeper have it knocked out of their hand, or the other goalkeeper had their Chelsea. I think that was a VAR review, but no other clear and obvious call has been overturned all season. They're just not overturning things that require a clear and obvious standard, as far as I can tell.
It's very, I mean, we saw how dumb it was in our match against Newcastle, which, you know, we should have had, like, at least one penalty, if not 2. And, you know, they're just not going to overrule the referee unless it's, you know, just pass interference against the Saints level of atrocious. So, yeah, no, it sucked. That was bad. Michael, I'm curious for your opinion on this, because we've talked a lot about Harry Winks this year, but we haven't had you on the podcast yet this season. So where do you fall in the great Harry Winks wars?
So Harry Winks is a really weird player. Harry Winks is a player who, as far as I can tell, Harry Winks has, like, nearly elite levels of pass volume. He is a guy who constantly shows for the ball and passes it safely to the next player. He's also a player who almost never moves the ball forward in the attack. He's the guy who gets on the ball, makes a safe pass, and someone else moves the ball forward to moves the ball forward to press the ball. That's what he does, and he has reasonably good ball winning numbers. Like, they improved over the course of last season, but again, they are not like he's not a plus defensive central midfielder. The big skill that he provides you is kind of defensive in itself. He's really, really, really good at defensive possession. And if you have Harry Winks on your team, you are less likely to, you are more likely to have more possession during which time the other team is not attacking you. That's the big thing that he gives you, while not being a defensive sieve and not being, completely useless in terms of making some runs off the ball. And that is a very peculiar skill set. The teams that make, I was looking at players who had numbers like this, trying to find anyone who was, who was completing as many passes as Harry Winks while not doing all of those other things. And a couple of the guys who came up were players on, were Barcelona players. But basically, like, this is when you play on a really, really great team with really great passers, like, you know, Lionel Messi, you can then have midfielders who just, like, complete passes constantly, and that's the most useful thing that they do. And they can be, like, sort of support players in that system. And that's kind of what I think that Winks can be. If we put him with the right set of players, if we put him with great ball progressors, if we can play a system, we don't have Lionel Messi, but we can play him in a system where he's with at least two of Tanguy Ndombele, Giovanni Lo Celso, and Christian Eriksen. And then what he's doing is constantly having us keep possession of the ball so that great creative players can do something and so that our defenders don't have to defend because we constantly have the ball. But, like, it's a pretty limited role where he's going to be a very valuable player. And so when he's alongside Moussa Sissoko, who can't pass the ball and isn't very good at defending in midfield, all we're going to see is the things that he can't do. And, like, so I am hopeful that Harry Winks is sort of going to – he's the sort of player who his skill set plays up to the quality of his teammates and plays down to the quality of his teammates. So we have a bad team on the field, he's not going to fix anything. It's just going to get worse. We have a really good team on the field, he should be pretty useful.
What you're saying is we should sell him to Barcelona.
Yes, exactly.
It's worth pointing out that his most important contribution in the match involved passing across the field and backwards. So, his commitment to his brand is impressive.
I think I heard on the NBC broadcast, they said that no player in the Premier League had made more sideways passes than Winks, other than Alderweireld.
Hey, man, if it works, it works.
I mean, against Newcastle and Man City, we made, like, no team has made more sideways passes than us in those two matches, like, in four matches. It's kind of bad.
That's another trophy for Spurs.
We did it. Who says Pochettino still has achievements he needs to accomplish at Tottenham?
The weird thing about Winks is that we have seen him, like, in that move that ended up with the penalty, he drove forward out of midfield with the ball at his feet and played some, like, little 1-2s and to move the ball downfield. Like, we've seen him do those kinds of runs with the ball and, like, get involved briefly in the final third. And so I do wonder if there's a way to get that out of him, but because... You know, we've seen glimpses of it, but it's just so much not what he does on a regular basis that, you know, it's almost not worth persisting with once we have all of our best players back.
But I think what Michael said really plays into this, Ben, is like we have seen so few games with Winks in a not completely broken midfield, and I think that's a valid question that you've just asked, which is it worth persisting with when we do have, you know, Lo Celso, Ndombele, Eriksen et al. In the team, and like maybe, but I don't know. It's I guess just they clearly envision using Winks in a certain way, and I would imagine they've got a, you know, they're sort of looking at, you know, doing that with one of those players, but it's I hopefully we start seeing it against Palace next week, but we haven't seen it. We've barely seen it so far.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is we're either going to find out real quick, can Ndombele and Lo Celso play together in a midfield two or not? And if not, then Harry Winks is the closest thing to a six that we have, assuming Eric Dier is not viable as a player anymore. Or I guess we could turn Ndombele into a six and really waste the best things about him. And partner him with like Sissoko, you know. So, you know, I have a feeling that we're probably going to see a lot more Winks this season because so far we haven't seen Lo Celso play as a midfielder at Spurs. In his appearances, he played right wing for some reason, and as a more attacking midfielder at the end of the Arsenal game. So, a lot of our season is going to depend on how good might Harry Winks be. And that kind of scares me.
I mean, I think Lo Celso is really the X factor here because I don't think we have any kind of indication as to how we're going to use him. So, you know, we could just have a vision on using him as some sort of attacking midfielder. I would hope that we're going to revise that based on the fact that Eriksen didn't go anywhere, but who the hell knows?
I mean, last season, Pochettino used both Eriksen and Dele as central midfielders. So I feel like even if he is a quote-unquote Eriksen replacement, Eriksen plays a lot of central midfield. Like, he's going to find himself there. And there are ways to, like, whether it's a pivot or whether it is, like, a three with Eriksen, Lo Celso, and Ndombele sitting deeper, like, I'm reasonably hopeful that, like, Pochettino doesn't have as strict a split between a central midfielder and attacking midfielder. He expects those players to be doing a ton of pressing and running and dropping in and some rotating between those positions. So, like, even if he sees Lo Celso's attacking midfielder, like, he sees Eriksen and Dele as attacking midfielders, and they do a lot of central midfielding. So, like, I kind of think I'm pretty hopeful about that. That it's going to work out the way we want it to.
I'm generally on the same page as you, Kaylee, but it's so weird that, like, I don't know, like, just say, like, all that makes sense, but when you say it out loud, or I say it out loud, or think it to myself, it feels like such an excuse, or just like, you know, like West Ham fans talking themselves into how they're going to finish in top four. Like, it's just, I know it's not the same as that, but it just feels that way.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is if we're getting our best players on the pitch, it is Lo Celso and Ndombele, and then Kane, Dele, Eriksen, and Son. Like, those six guys are clear best players to play in that attack. And I would hope Pochettino knows that and will try to devise a system that makes that happen and doesn't sacrifice one of them for Harry Winks, who, for all his, you know, limited utility and you know, potential usefulness, is just clearly not at the same level as these guys, talent-wise. I'm optimistic as well. But, you know, we saw a Sissoko-Winks midfield for all of last season, and you never know.
Well, it's what's so weird about this is these aren't, like, weird purchases that we made. These aren't like bargain bin, you know, players that we got. These are very high level players that from all indications we have were Pochettino targets who we got from the top shelf. Like, we weren't settling for anyone with them. So I would imagine he's got an idea about how he wants everything to fit together. And, you know, the fact that Lo Celso's either not fit or not integrated in the team yet, whatever it is, probably makes it kind of hard to see where it's all going. But at the same time, I don't know. Like, I can't tell how much of this Winks thing is utility and how much of it's a plan.
Right. We can't bench our star players or our marquee signings for Harry Winks. It's just that doesn't make any sense. And I think Pochettino knows that. But we'll see.
We sure will. We sure will. How are you guys feeling about Palace?
They suck. We'll beat them.
Just like Newcastle?
Yeah. If we were playing Newcastle next week, I'd be very confident we'd beat them. They suck.
Hey, I'm sure Manchester United thought the same thing before they lost to Crystal Palace somehow.
Yep. Crystal Palace are 2-1-1, and they are terrible.
All thanks to your boy, Jordan Ayew, the best striker in the Premier League.
Yep, he's scoring one out of every three shots this year. That's definitely going to continue. He's definitely really, really good at taking and scoring shots. That's definitely a thing.
Michael happened to tweet prior to the Man U game about Crystal Palace's problem was not having guys who take shots or score shots, and how ludicrous an idea it was for Jordan Ayew to be the guy to solve these problems, and then he promptly scored the go-ahead goal.
Yep, and scored one of the goals. Yep. He's got five shots this season. He scored two of them. You keep it up, Jordan Ayew. I believe in you.
So, you know, take all of Michael's advice and prescription and grant.
Just not next week. Just don't do it next week, Jordan. I don't know. I feel like I should feel good about this. It's all indications are Ndombele is going to be back. So a lot of Spurs problems should be fixed in relatively short order. I would imagine Eriksen and Aurier are going to get integrated into the team. Walker Peters might be back. It's kind of, that one's a little more vague. But, you know, I don't know. I feel like we've been talking about this all night. But these guys get fit or come back, and a lot of our problems should get solved fairly quickly.
You know, the other player we haven't talked about who is also on the road to recovery is Ryan Sessegnon. And another player we haven't talked about who is also terrible this season is Danny Rose, who has not looked like the guy who came back fresh last season and was a good left back again. He has looked almost as much of a liability as Davinson Sanchez at right back. So, you know, can Sessegnon actually be a left back for us and be good at a position that we've been bad at is something we might find out really soon. Well, that's kind of exciting.
It is, but I guess that's another big question mark because all the sort of, you know, leaks and reporting around Sessegnon is saying that, which this doesn't make a ton of sense to me. Apparently the plan is to play him as more of a left winger or midfielder this year, but the long-term plan is to transition him in at left back, which I don't know. Maybe they're just saying that until they resolve whatever's going on with Danny contract-wise, but I don't know. That doesn't make a ton of sense to me.
Yeah, well, we've also got Ben Davis, so
can't be worse. I can't believe I'm saying that. Can't be worse. So
yeah, so we've got a lot of question marks.
Yeah, so I think the thing is there seems to be sort of a bad vibe around the club right now, and which is a little kind of, if you take a step back, it's a little perplexing because we had a really good transfer window, no matter what Matt Law says. We had a really good transfer window. We brought in some really good players. Obviously, you know, Eriksen not leaving is a little bit of a, you know, question mark or a problem in terms of team chemistry. You know, Aurier still being there when apparently he wanted out is a bit of an issue. You know, there's a few other things going on there, but I don't know. There seems to be like Pochettino's complaining in a very weird way. You've got Kieran Trippier giving interviews that just say that it sounds very much like the team just sort of gave up on him and didn't really talk to him on the way out. But I don't know. There's like a worse vibe around this team. I mean, obviously, the bad results don't help either. But I feel like there is an outsized negative vibe around this team than what is really there. But I mean, do you guys think that is it feels worse than it is, or is this? Do you think there's something going on behind the scenes that concerns you?
Ryan, you're negative. What do you think?
Yeah, I was gonna say. I guess I'm the negative one because Rob's not here, but I'm not that concerned. Like I said, I'm concerned about some of the managerial decisions that Pochettino has made in these first four games. But in terms of overall squad management, squad building, you know, kind of team harmony stuff, I'm not really concerned about that. I think, you know, Lloris came out today and said, you know, the Eriksen thing is not a distraction that's affecting the rest of the team. We haven't really integrated all the new signings yet. This is the first summer we've made signings in a long time, so obviously that's going to be a new experience for everybody. You know, I think that if we are still having these conversations at the end of October, then maybe there's cause to be concerned, but not right now.
Well, as a podcast that talks about soccer, I think we are contractually obligated to ask, will Mauricio Pochettino be at Spurs next year?
I don't know why anybody would want a guy who has had such a terrible start to the season. So I'm sure he'll be stuck with us one more season.
I mean, the Real Madrid job is going to be available. So,
but why would it go to a loser like Pochettino who can't beat Newcastle?
When was the last time Real Madrid beat Newcastle?
Oh, that's a good point. I don't know. Well, they did beat them to the heart of Santiago Munoz.
God damn it. I opened that up for you. I've never been more upset in my life.
End the podcast.
Brian, you might say that I am living the dream right now.
Come on, you Spurs. Right.
Michael, do you have it since you speak to the broader world of football more often? Do you have any thoughts on the negative vibes at Tottenham Hotspur right now?
Yeah, no, it's very confusing, and my main takeaway is that like something is happening, and Mauricio Pochettino tells the press every week, "Hey, y'all, something really weird is happening, and I'm going to say some weird and cryptic shit about it." And then no one reports on what it is. We have not had a whisper of actual reporting on what it is. So we're at, on a podcast, we're like, hey, what's going on here? I have no idea. And that's because, like, the people who, in theory's job it is to tell us what's going on just aren't. So no one has any idea.
It is genuinely incredible how these reporters clearly know things and won't say anything about them until, like, no, what's not even weird is they won't say anything about them. What's weird is they'll, like, casually drop it on a podcast in, like, 2 months and, like, not write a story about it.
Right, or, like, give a cryptic tweet that says something. And, yeah, we don't know. But we do know Pochettino is making a lot of weird statements. So
what's strange is, and look, I don't want to absolve the club of anything here, but if we're looking at like what kind of transfer drama could be floating around the club, like I don't know what happened with Vertonghen. Who knows there? Maybe he just decided to try his hand at a Bosman. But like Toby, from everything we've been led to understand, just wants a big time payout and just nobody's come in for him. It doesn't sound like we've been hard asses about teams that want to pay a fee. It sounds like no one can agree to his salary demands. No one came in for Eriksen. Like, I don't think we're being difficult there, especially given that Eriksen seemingly only wanted to go to Madrid. Now, I think, you know, Perez basically promised to buy him, and then when Zidane got a ton of leverage, he decided he didn't want him anymore, and it's just been a weird situation ever since. But this doesn't seem like we're fucking guys around. It's not like when Luka Modric wanted to go to Chelsea and we weren't letting him. Like it just seems like all these guys are the victims of a very weird transfer market, and I mean maybe they're just generally unhappy and it's nobody's fault in particular, but it's very weird.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think the transfer market has been very odd, kind of everywhere. Like, you aren't seeing a lot of prime-age players move up the ladder like they would have in the past. Whether that's, someone moving from Bournemouth to Everton, or Everton to Man United, or, Spurs to Real Madrid. Like, unless they're, these big, huge megastars, or, really young players with a lot of potential... Like, you're not seeing a ton of movement in these, kind of 27-year-old, very good guys, kind of all across and up and down the pyramid. And it's just a very strange, I think, financial reality.
No one came in for Toby. Nope. Toby built his contract to be, if he didn't get a sizable enough raise or a transfer before then, to be an easy pickings for a transfer in the final year. No one came in for him. $25 million is a bargain for him.
The problem that Toby ran into, though, is that it's $25 million now or zero in a year.
It's still wild that nobody – I mean, obviously someone's going to be able to offer him a lot more money then, but and teams aren't going to have to pay that salary. But still, you think there would be some team out there desperate enough for a defender who could afford that salary. I mean, Juve seems like they're
– if you're going to spend $90 million on a Harry Maguire or whatever.
Yes, exactly, but – I mean, it seems like Toby got caught up in, the Woodward-Mourinho war. What was that, 2 years ago, last year? And his name was just mud ever since then with Woodward. But I just, like I said, I can't believe no one put in a bid for Toby. Because it doesn't sound like we were fighting people off.
I mean, he's also old. And I think teams are reluctant to take on an old guy at those wages for... the number of years he would want a contract. It's a weird situation. And again, like Michael said, they could get him next summer and not have to pay $25 million to Spurs or pounds to Spurs. They could pay that to those wages and then not feel so bad about carrying a 35-year-old on their books anymore.
But I just think it's crazy no one came in for him before that. It's just, I like you said, Ben, it seems like something's, if this is baseball, I'd say it's collusion. But... I don't know if it's just that, he's a little bit on the older side and no one wants to pay him the salary. The rumors we've heard is he's asking for a shitload of money. And that would certainly make a lot of sense if that was the case, that he just wants stupid wages and no one's willing to give an older person that much money.
The one thing is I am reasonably confident, and again, this is based on sort of, it's based on an argument from silence in that there weren't a lot of reports of this, but I really do believe that if there had been teams coming in with significant bids for Eriksen or Alderweireld, it would have been reported.
I agree with that.
Doesn't seem like we don't – we have reasonably good reason to think that the hang-up here was not a lack of suitors.
Yeah, I think that's entirely accurate, and it's just weird, man. Because I don't think, and maybe Jan's the only one of these guys who I think might have getting a Bosman was what he's thinking of doing. He's the only one. I think Toby and Christian thought they were going to get big fat transfer fees. Christian in particular, I think it was. I'm convinced that Perez told him he was going to come and buy him. And he didn't, because Zidane's a crazy person. But it's really weird how it just didn't work. These are excellent players. Eriksen in particular is not that old.
No, he is still a prime age. A very good, not quite a superstar, but basically a superstar. Or should be a superstar. Barcelona is paying what they paid for Philippe Coutinho, who, might be better in... a lot of respects, but to not even pay a third of that for Christian Eriksen is kind of insane.
Yep. Or they spent $90 million for Eden Hazard's expiring contract.
Exactly.
Yeah, but it's not like Real Madrid don't have money. They're happy to do it.
They could have clearly got, I'm convinced, they could have gotten Eriksen for $50 million, which is like nothing for Real Madrid, especially this summer. But he wants Pogba, which isn't going to happen for at least a year. So it's just, I can't get over how fucking wild this is. Does anyone on this podcast think that there's any chance we sign Eriksen or Toby to an extension this year?
I believe the ITK is that Toby is working on an extension, which would explain him not having any problems with Pochettino. Like, I think it's definitely possible.
Do you think Eriksen?
No one knows. I mean, clearly Eriksen is, like, sad right now. And so, you know, what does he decide to do with himself next? I don't know. Once he gets less sad, doesn't seem likely.
I mean,
it wouldn't be good financial management by his management team, but I don't know.
I mean, there's just with both of them. I mean, Toby in particular, I think, has fewer options than Eriksen will. But, you know, it's just a matter of, like, is it worth it to have the security as opposed to maximizing your, you know, financial, you know, compensation, which I doubt he's going to want to leave all that money on the table. Toby, like, I think you make a match more realistic case for Toby, especially if, you know, there has been negotiations going on for a while. It's been reported in some spottier media outlets, but not, you know, not anywhere super reputable, which doesn't mean it won't happen. But I feel a lot better about our back line if Toby resigned.
I mean, the fact that Toby was playing while Jan and Eriksen were not, it suggests that he's playing ball, you know. I mean, that's at least a possible read. And so if I would have to bet on one of the three of them signing a new deal, based on what we've seen this season, it would have to be Toby. Eriksen, I feel like he's in a position where he can reassess next summer, and if Real Madrid still don't want him, or Barcelona don't want him, or, you know, none of the clubs he might have his eye on, I think, you know, we could just as easily re-sign him to a new deal next summer. And I think his agents should know that. Whereas Toby, you know, at 32, you know, a lot could happen over the course of a season that could make him a lot less desirable beyond being just another year older.
I think if Christian Eriksen listens to this podcast, I would just point out that Daniel Levy has kept his word to sell two of our biggest players to Real Madrid over the years. So I would, you know, if I was Eriksen, because I would love Tottenham Hotspur and not want to make as much money as possible, I would just sign an extension with Spurs and, you know, come to some sort of gentleman's agreement with, you know, if Real Madrid come in for me, you're going to sell. But
it doesn't even have to be a gentleman's agreement. Like, you just build that into the contract. You can contract for whatever you want. You know, he could have a Real Madrid specific 40 million pound release clause, 30 million pound, like something very generous. You know, we could build that right into his contract. And that's an option.
I'd do it. I mean, but I'm maybe not making the same decisions he is. So I just really hope we keep Eriksen. I don't think it's necessarily. I think some of the way this year has gone has made him. I think people have been slightly overrating his importance to the team. Not that he isn't important to the team, but just the way that people have been sort of portraying it. But he's really fucking good, and I would really like to keep him around, even with Lo Celso here.
Yep.
So, does anyone have any other final thoughts about Tottenham Hotspur before we get out of here? Benjamin, do you have anything?
No, I've got nothing. I'm just really excited for this 2-week break where we get to watch the glory that is random international matches.
Fucking hate international football so much. Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at ComradeUSpurs, and you can find me on Tumblr at Michael Cayley.
Brian, do you have any final thoughts about Tottenham Hotspur tonight?
I'm still very angry about the whole goal thing. I'm just sitting over here seething.
Would you say you're ready to take on the world?
God damn it. I swear to God.
Where can people find you on the internet when you're living your dream, Brian?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Brian_Ashlock. That is Brian with a Y.
And Michael, do you have any final thoughts about Tottenham Hotspur tonight?
Yeah, they're terrible. Soccer's bad. People don't like it. You can listen to Bean talk about soccer that no one should listen to at Double Pivot Pod. And obviously, I am currently on. You can please accept my my request from LinkedIn from Brett Rainbow.
of course. And naturally, you can find me on Twitter.com at skipjack0079, giving you all the goal-related content that Brian Ashlock can handle. And that's it for us. For Michael, for Ben, for Brian, and of course for Brett Rainbow. I'm your host, Greg. Come on, you Spurs.